feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from.
Bring it on.
I haven't done it yet. I may do it.
And that is because these are two-seaters.
Unclear where they may have gotten that.
Can you tell us what this is?
This is the Brian Suits Show.
AM 770 KTTH, Brian Suits here. Finding out that we need interns just to beep baseball players in their recorded freakouts. Because, you know how I like to dot my I's and cross my T's, producer Greg, here on a Friday?
I prefer dotting the lowercase J's.
The Todd Sotomayor freakout is already edited in the whole thing. The Yakima's Todd Sotomayor. This one time, guess what, occasionally, baseball players freak out. He freaked out because baseball journalists were questioning him and his choice of living as a pitcher, in fact. And
that's out there.
Okay, and that's, and he goes right to 11.
That's the most you can play from it.
I can play two more seconds.
You think I'm pissed?
He wasn't kidding. It turns out he was. And so somebody did a yeoman's work and beeped the heck out of Todd Stottlemyre freaks out. But
he's come to 11.
He didn't do that great of a job. But, boy, I will tell you what, my work over the weekend, have you ever heard the classic Tommy Lasorda? The best thrower of swear words was Tommy Lasorda.
He was poetic in his cussing.
He did one about Kurt Bevilacqua of the Padres.
Household name.
And Tom Niedenfuhr, the pitcher for the Dodgers, great Coug. And Bevilacqua just said something about someone who got a hit at Dodger Stadium, and a journalist did what they're supposed to do and asked Lasorda, well, what do you think about what Dave Kingman said about whatever? And I can't even with the beeps, I can't play it. But that's what we do during a break in radio. And so here's two more seconds. So there, because they're questioning his choice of career.
Who taped our pre-show meeting?
I know. Wouldn't have to be the best. did I mention that someone's apparently the Professional Bull Riding Association, a PBRA event, is in town this weekend.
And you're excited?
My first thought was I would be wildly excited to see the Amateur Bull Riding Association. That sounds,
you just want to see people get hurt.
That sounds wildly more fascinating than the professionals, because they wear helmets and stuff. So we're getting new visibility on the introduction of furries into Utah.
This is a wild story.
This is the nuttiest thing. There are people who, for whatever gratification, just fashion sense or more carnal gratification, dress up as, what would you say, as animals?
As sports mascots at a basketball
basically
game.
And so this comes out of our good friends in Payson, Utah, a little further south of Spanish Fork than I lived.
I lived
there in Sandy on 94 South.
And is there or isn't there evidence of this? Was it blown out of proportion? An ABC affiliate in Utah went on a fact-finding mission about this. Apparently, there were students who led a walkout because they were upset.
Who got that assignment? The assignment editor said, get to the bottom of this furry story done in Payson.
But, I mean, it took on a nature of its own. It went national because apparently, allegedly, these furries were going around school biting kids and annoying them. That was the original story. And then, okay, so play the news report.
There was some kids dressed up as animals, and I heard that another kid got bit by one of them.
There's a lot of speculation.
So furries and toothies.
Surrounding the protest that happened at Nebo Middle School Wednesday morning.
In Payson, Utah.
Nearly 75 students and parents showed up facing the school, saying they're unhappy with how administration is handling reports of harassment.
Okay. You guys cannot record me without my permission!
Oh, what's she dressed as?
They had a blurred image because it was a
minor
youth, yeah,
supposedly. But it was an otter or a sea otter or whatever.
Handling reports of harassment.
Okay. You guys cannot record me without my permission.
This is the
video.
You are a murderer of love.
One Nebo Middle School student took last week. Parents say there's an issue between some students and others who call themselves furries, or people who enjoy dressing up as cartoonish animals.
Okay. Okay, ever seen Footloose? Same town. Okay, all right, same place. Not fiction. And so are they exploiting the kids by showing this kind of behavior? Well, are you a murderer of love? I think so.
This is Strudel, a member of the furry fandom.
This is not parody, by the way. This is not parody. Just want to clarify.
Everybody got to get Footloose. So set the scene for us. What does Strudel dress as? If I was a furry named Strudel, I'd be a kitty.
It looks like some sort of dog or cat or something
or
like that.
Or a pass at
Hard
Chihuahua.
For me to identify.
Strudel, what are you?
Though they've been a furry for over a decade, they have their own opinion.
Oh, their pronouns are they, them, who's a good boy?
It's crazy that it's escalated to this point where these kids are being so distracting to their peers that their peers want to stage a walkout or to have, you know, the next generation kind of muddy our name and not represent it very well. It is kind of disappointing.
Boy, you thought the Kennedys were self-important.
Strudel believes they're...
How about the furries of Pace in Utah?
There should be some limits.
Continue doing things you like. Continue dressing up. Continue making art. But maybe let's keep it outside of school hours.
As for the school, Sorensen says they have one main goal.
We want every student to feel safe when they come to school. And we want students to get along. In fact, we want adults to get along.
So, I mean, I would think that if you're a furry, you'd get together with other furries and you'd form a band, like a Scooby-Doo tribute band.
I dream of a world where my children can play with furries and not have it be a national controversy.
Then we can put them on the moon and leave them there in the next decade.
No, but the wildest part of the story is that the ABC affiliate in Utah interviewed this furry with a straight face. like it was a legitimate
Strudel?
Interlocutor with them. It's just insane. It feels like you're on Mars when you're watching this video.
Is this also Strudel?
There was some kids dressed up as animals, and I heard that another kid got bit by one of them.
There's a lot of speculation surrounding the protest.
That's assault, by the way. Even if you're a furry, if you're in character, that's still assault.
That happened at Nebo Middle School Wednesday morning. Nearly 75 students and parents showed up facing the school saying they're unhappy with how administration is handling reports of harassment.
Okay. You guys cannot record me without my permission.
I love it when they get to that level of the screaming. Let me tell you, this crap wouldn't fly in West Jordan or Tooele, but...
This is video.
Anyway, dressed as something furry.
You guys cannot record me without my permission!
Oh, they're doing dock dogs. You know the dogs that leap for distance in the water? They're at the Puyallup.
Oh, okay.
It started last night. Those are the... who's a good boy? The dog that jumps out the dock. Always a good boy.
A doodle.
So there you go. And not this one.
Record me without my permission!
Well, okay, that's why you're going to sign these waivers, okay? Or you're not going to be viral, by the way. If you tell any of these kids, do something crazy, you'll be viral. And that would happen. So there you go. Is it time time for Know-It-All?
First thing,
in 1948, the U.S. government dropped beavers on Idaho.
To a load, 20 beaver ready for the flight to Mountain Meadows.
They really did. They really, really. And because someone emailed, they weren't little harnesses. They weren't actually looking down and doing a parachute landing fall to standard. They were in boxes. So did some of them get hung up in a tree and they starved to death? I don't know. Back in 1948, no one asked those kind of questions. That's a very 2024 kind of thing.
Parachutes are attached to cargo lines, and the boxes are stacked in rows along the waist of the plane.
There you go. It's that simple. Okay, we parachuted beavers, and you're today days old. That's your knowledge. You too can Google 1948 beaver parachute. And that's how they repopulated the beavers into Idaho after man hunted them out. And that is how the federal government is going to be parachuting grizzlies into Toppenish and Yakima.
Chuck's going to help me tell you a story.
Is it about wood?
So there you go. And we learned that when we talked to the congressman. Which was that still this week? Was that earlier this week?
Sounds like it was earlier this week.
Yeah. So anyway.
People can podcast it if they text suits to 1-800-465-8770. A lot of people missed it. Shame on you. But I think it was either Monday or Tuesday. Representative Dan Newhouse about the reintroduction of grizzlies to the Cascades.
And my favorite part of that interview was this part.
Unhappy with how administration is handling reports of harassment.
Okay.
You guys cannot record me without my permission.
Well, we had his permission. We did record it, and it's on the app. And he calmed down and gave us some great information. all right, thing two.
Mr. Woodchuck, I know you love anything with wood in it, but please, let's just stick to the story.
That's fine with me.
Second thing.
Israel targeted Iran's nuclear program's headquarters in the city of Isfahan, and they did it remotely. And no one in Iran is real happy today about this because the Israelis showed, once again, they can operate with impunity on Iranian soil. The Iranians can hit Israeli soil with debris from Iran, but they cannot operate on Israeli soil. The Israelis showed the Iranians with a little bit of blackout and an attack overnight that they can, that basically you've been pantsed. You've been pantsed, Iran. This is the city of Isfahan around 2 a.m. when lights are crucial last night. Lights go out. That's the operator breathing through his nose.
And boom goes the dynamite.
So there you go. And in an unrelated thing, around the Fort Lewis region last night, very helicoptery.
Oh, no kidding. Were they two-seaters?
They were 37-seaters. Chinooks, low-flying, and it's... When you look at one or you hear one high up in the sky, you would not believe they could surprise you. But what's really funny about 2 a.m. around Fort Lewis is that the Chinook helicopter, as seen here, can surprise you.
And, 2 hours late.
And they will wake the dogs up, let me tell you.
To a load, 20 beaver ready for the flight to Mountain Meadows.
In the surprising Chinook.
And that is because these are two-seaters.
And here's why, by the way. it was a kind of full moon last night, right? When you drove in, did you see how bright the sun was?
I didn't look up.
I mean, the moon does not emanate any energy. I'm not Congressman Barbara Lee. But the storied 160th, the Night Stalkers, 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, their Chinook company is at Fort Lewis. The Chinooks you see with the big needle coming out the front, those are thems. And maybe,
call them pokers.
Perhaps you're seeing them around the Yakima area these days because that's where they are for a couple weeks. But apparently they're back. And I'm not equating one thing to another, but their job is not wasting taxpayer money. So there's that. But anyway, the message to Iran is, hi, we're Israel. We're operating with impunity on your soil. You're not operating on our soil. And then the final message is, keep off the grass. So effectively, they're telling the Iranians, look, we know you have a nuclear bomb. We know you're waiting for a time and place of your own choosing to announce it. We're announcing to the Gulf Arab states, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, the rest, that we know that they know this too. And so the power outage in Isfahan, which is, by the way, if the Tri-Cities, if Richland had an analog in Iran, you know, Richland became Richland during the Manhattan Project in World War II. Maybe you've seen Oppenheimer. That is Isfahan today. A large university there dedicated to nuclear power. And the Iranians this morning, even on their own TV, on PressTV.ir, they showed footage in the daytime of Isfahan and identified it as Iran's nuclear headquarters. And that's what Isfahan is to Iran, as Richland was to the Manhattan Project. So Anyway, there you go. And
thanks for that Israel update.
Yeah, so again, here it comes. Israel. And the lights go out. And so there you go. And once again,
to a load, 20 beaver ready for the flight to Mountain Meadows.
And there you go. So that's thing one. That's a long thing too, I should say.
Third thing.
Trump loves the publicity. CNN, MSNBC, the rest of them, they can denounce Trump all they want, but they can't get enough of playing him. Now he's all over YouTube asking for donations. What they call the pre-roll. Trump is all over YouTube now. And it's about time that he's doing that.
Very bad thing. The whole world is watching this hoax. You got a DA that's out of control. You have a judge that's highly conflicted. The whole thing is a mess.
And there's nothing that they can. If they want Trump audio, that's what they're going to get. And you know what? If they're shocked that people are taking that, are sympathetic with that. And now a majority of Democrats believe that this is politically motivated or whatever you'd say, inspired. Well, then stop playing them. Except when you play them, people watch your little channel. When you don't play them, then you're NPR.
Very bad thing. The whole world is watching this hoax. You got a DA that's out of control.
And so then they'll have experts talking about contempt of court and go to jail and all thing. You know what? If what you want is to make them go away, putting him in jail will just triple his donations, so go ahead. And if I were him, a big picture strategy, I would be telling him to think real hard about denouncing the judge and continuing with this and maybe going to jail.
Under New York state law, it's not the judge being weak or feckless or afraid of Donald Trump. The law says that there's a process that he has to follow. Now, the question is it civil contempt where you're trying to compel him to behave better in the future? Is it criminal contempt where you're locking him up for things he's done in the past, which is much harder and almost in effect requires.
Please. But anyway, so thing three, an ethical dilemma. On the day after the guitar genius Dickie Betts, writer and player of most of the most iconic Allman Brothers songs
and singer,
that he's dead of cancer at the age of 80. And again, play. Do you have a? I've got the live Jessica, which is a bit of an acquired taste.
Oh, is this fourth thing?
Yeah,
fourth thing.
Is this it?
I mean,
some students saying they.
Oh, whoops! That's more
that's Columbia University.
Yeah. So anyway, the brilliant. Play some Jessica, so people know what the hell we're talking about.
Okay, stand by.
I thought I recorded. So.
Give me a moment.
Because you wouldn't know his voice if I played it.
I started playing guitar when I was
16.
About 16 years old.
That's about right. So is it a mortal dude sin if I mention right now that overnight Taylor Swift released two albums? It is popular culture news. It'll be in the news.
Oh, is this like the Tortured Poet album or something?
I don't know. I don't know. Like Travis is ghosting me album or whatever. But
Dead Poets Society.
But to go from hearing, going down the Dickie Betts Allman Brothers hole around 9 p.m. last night, And then realizing that I one time saw him walk out on a stage and play this song with the Grateful Dead.
It's just such superior music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The musicianship, the showmanship that they had when they played
you
live
should
was
see
bar none.
Some of the stuff on YouTube is if you wanna walk in off the front yard when the lawn is dry tomorrow and give yourself a break, go on YouTube and watch the Bill Graham live when he closed the Fillmore East in New York. He had Dickie Betts play, and it's so 70s. It's like 1977 and like giant bell bottom pants and the hair and the hairy chest and back when that was legal and the whole thing. And he's a guy up there playing live is astounding. And you can just smell the hippies. You can smell the weed in there. And then you see the full Allman Brothers band up there. And at Fillmore West in San Francisco, and Bill Graham shut down Fillmore East and the whole thing. It's a different era. And I mean, I'm taken back to, you know, I'm like 12 when this is going on. And I have zero living memory of like Lynyrd Skynyrd plane crash or whatever. My brother claims he does, but he's lying.
And look, I know this is a back in my day type of comment. Yeah,
kids these days, that's what it is. It's goodness, not music, it's just yelling.
The complexity, the nuance, the melodies, the talent of an Allman Brothers or a Dickie Betts compared to today's drivel, which is just Taylor Swift, three chords and complaining about your ex-boyfriends. I mean, the juxtaposition is wild. I don't think today's modern music is going to be remembered nearly as much as tunes that were written 50, 40 years ago by bands like the Allman Brothers.
And I didn't know that the song Ramblin' Man, Dickie Betts wrote that. It is basically autobiographical. His dad was such a construction worker wanderer that they were constantly moving around up and down Highway 41 in Florida. Because he is Florida man. And when you see him, you would say, that's Florida man. That's the guy.
And then as I grew older and played a little while longer, I got into B.B. King. And then I started wondering where B.B. King learned to play. So I started going back into his background, and I discovered Blind Lemon Jefferson and Django Reinhardt, which was a great discovery.
So, and by the way, you should all discover Django Reinhardt and check that out. But so you know what I did at 1 a.m. this morning? He says that, and I'm like, well, who in the barreling blank is Blind Lemon Jefferson? So I start clicking on Blind Lemon Jefferson videos at 1 a.m. And, you know, and the kids, the dogs are like, just shut up with Blind Lemon. You don't know Blind Lemon Jefferson? And all that, and because they can manipulate my keyboard, and they know my PIN. But anyway, do yourself a favor and go deep in the Allman Brothers YouTube hole, because it's all on there. It's amazing. We'll take a break when we come back. if you don't listen to me and listen to some Allman Brothers this weekend, we're gonna come back with some Taylor Swift. That is not an empty threat.
Can't wait.
That is not an empty threat. Also, new Title IX rules, kids, and Tortured Poets Department, and more. Trump jurors are being identified, and that's wrong, apparently. And more stuff locally. We'll get to it right after this. AM 770 KTTH.
Don't fly, Mr. Bluebird. I'm just walking down the road. Early morning sunshine. Tell me all I need to know.
We know the value of voting Democratic.
This phone message is going out.
That is a AI-generated robocall, not from Joe Biden, but using catchphrases like malarkey and my uncle was eaten by cannibals and other things that Joe Biden has been recorded saying, manipulated voters in New Hampshire on the day of the New Hampshire primary, Democratic primary. And this is part of what's leading people not to trust 2024. A new poll reveals nearly half the voters believe AI-generated content will negatively impact the outcome of the presidential race in November, 43%. The survey of 2,000 registered voters reveals not only that people are increasingly pessimistic about how easily it's made, but that it could affect the election. So we thought we'd bring on board our good, close, longtime close personal friend, the cybersecurity expert, host of the Professional Chief Information Security Officer podcast, David Malicote, he is a senior executive who oversees an organization's information. That's what a CISO guy is. And by the way, so David, do we say CISO or KISO or what do we say? Hard C, soft C?
Typically CISO.
CISO, excellent. All right. David Malicote is here to talk about this. So I assume you've heard that the fake Biden thing. Did you buy it? Well, first time you heard it, were you awestruck at how authentic it was, or did you immediately smell a rat?
I live in the world of skepticism, so I immediately smelled a rat. But I would say that that typical voter or just a typical person that's not in cybersecurity, I think it would be pretty believable right out of the gate.
So we learned that on average, only a third of respondents were able to correctly spot AI-generated images. I mean, that's enough of a margin to make it worth your while and your time, I guess. But they never look right to me. You can always see a mile away. But are there enough people that you can fool?
But they're getting better. That's part of the issue, I think. So, I've been kind of using Elon Musk's view of the world recently when it comes to AI. He said by the end of this next year, AI will be smarter, quote unquote, than a single person. And then by like 2029, it'll be smarter than all the people combined, everyone. And so that means in that case, deep fakes or things like this are just only going to get better in that same way. And so there will come a time where we will cross that Rubicon where you won't be able to tell the difference. The only way you would be able to is if you had another machine tell you that it was a fake.
So for instance, in a real world example, I was only... not that I care about the royal family or whatever, but the fact that Photoshop experts were saying, well, as you see here, Kate Middleton's pinky finger doesn't line up with, you know, whatever. Only in that way could I spot what they were spotting. So, I mean, if it is to be feared, wouldn't the machine self-correct and give us a better fake Kate Middleton family picture?
And it could do that for sure. It could make it, but at the same time, there are artifacts left behind in any given process when a computer gets involved that lets you know that it has been, let's say, touched by a machine. So like with that Photoshop, folks know they can run it through a machine or an AI, let's say, even, and know that Photoshop or that photo had been manipulated by Photoshop or something similar, and very much the same way with AI and like deep fakes, whether it be voice, audio, video, it would be able to do the same thing. It'd be able to spot that something was off that had been manipulated.
And because I've worked as a consultant on state level elections before, it's all about the money. So what is the return on investment on a 30-second political ad? Is it worth hiring the incels in the basement of the science building to do it if they charge $500 an hour and they take 4 hours? Can they come up with a product good enough to make people believe they're seeing Trump say black people have six toes or something, or what?
I think it is a case of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, right? So we, in our world in cybersecurity, we call it FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And there's two real areas that I see. One is the sensational, right? You can mock someone or you can make it a joke. And most people will be able to spot that pretty close, right? It's like, you know, Trump will never wind up being a liberal or vice versa. You're never going to see Biden say he's a Republican. But in the other side of things, it's the near middle. So I think it's the folks that are trying to manipulate the undecided voters. And it's what I call the nudge. It is a case of saying, I'm just going to put something out there that's just believable enough that I think maybe that candidate has changed their position or they're becoming more liberal or they're becoming more conservative. And I think that's what they're trying to do, is nudge those people in the middle to one side of the aisle or the other.
And so it's my understanding that when they manipulate a voice, you know, obviously they're taking samples, and it's hard to get more sampled than a president of the United States. And
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true and international effort to pressure.
I would say the one kryptonite that Biden has is that generally he says something far more ridiculous than you could even fake. But you can still grab him and make him say something even more ridiculous, I guess, right?
Absolutely. And the way that AI works is it is a predictor. And so basically, if you feed it enough information about what people have actually said, so if you took Joe Biden and took his history all the way back to, you know, because he's been in public for so long, you could get him to say pretty much anything you wanted to. You could actually, whatever you do, that clip you just played, you could get him to, that could be cleaned up to make it sound like he's, you know, perfectly normal.
But he's calling for true international depression.
True international depression.
I have no idea. That's the thing. Does AI have to know what he meant to say?
You could script it. I mean, you could infer what it was, and then you could put that, you could write it into AI, and AI would spit it back out in the proper words that you wanted it to say.
That would be really useful in real time when he's speaking as it is, but... That's unnecessary editorial on my part. I apologize. And so what would be the typical delivery device? A 30-second spot or a radio spot or TV spot or what?
I think the shorter the better, number one. I think what you're going to find, especially with deepfakes, is they're going to be short as possible because as the time goes by and it gets longer, so let's say 30 seconds, that's more time that you can put scrutiny on it and have that visual eye or that ear to say, that doesn't sound right. So I think it's the shorter clips that are going to happen. It's going to be the sound bites. Also, that feeds how we are anyway as a society because people want the sound bites. They want the, you know, short, impactful things. And so those two things will drive together. So I think it's the shorter, impactful statements that you're going to see, not the longer form.
It seems to me the best countermeasure would be immediate debunk. Because the longer you go these days, the more surely the thing is going to be viral by the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And the cement dries. So is that, am I onto something on that? Because that, if I was running a campaign, I would have a team, I would have a counter malarkey team that would just do that. They'd have little counter malarkey tabs on their uniforms and the whole thing, but that they would get on it immediately.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's one of those, you have at this point that you have to be proactive. And if I were sitting in any campaign, regardless of what it was, I would say you definitely have to have those teams that are going out there and proactively finding those things. As we all know, the initial splash of public reception is much higher than the correction that you see later, you know, days or weeks later. So get out in front of it as quickly as possible and just put your own real information out there.
Yeah, I'd say in your experience and in CISO, in the world of CISO, are people interested in the forensic frame by frame, note by note? I mean, what works? What do people get buried in information? Do they think that you're going over the top, so it's probably authentic?
It varies highly. I think a lot of it has to do with our background and experience. I think as we look at it from an older generation that did not grow up with technology, probably more susceptible. I think that you'll probably have the younger folks that will see it almost like a game where they grew up with technology. And I'm not saying they're going to be immediately cynical, but I think they'll see it more, they'll play with it more rather than seeing an older generation that just kind of takes it as gospel because that's how they were conditioned with the evening news as they were growing up.
Okay. Well, we'll have our eyes peeled on this because I smell a rat. I smell rats coming between now and November. Dave Melcote, cybersecurity expert. Thanks a lot for joining us this morning. AM 770 KTTH. Big thanks to David Melcote who joined us, cybersecurity expert and fella and chap. The House is voting on resolution HR 1160, the Repo Act, the Grab Putin's Money and Give It to Ukraine Act.
Shall we go to C-SPAN?
Right now there should be about 2 minutes left in the vote, but it's going to pass. You have a whole bunch of people who didn't vote, 362 not NVs, but 47 to 22, so it needs to pass by 60%, so it's going to be healthy. And it's really more the frustration I'm hearing that you're not hearing is that the Ukrainians have mastered the F-16, which any jet pilot will tell you. That's one of the sweet things about the F-16. One of the reasons it's the most flown aircraft in NATO is because you don't have to have a PhD to fly the freaking thing. You could put a 10-year-old in there and they would be airborne by the end of the day. And that the Ukrainians have thousands of hours in a similar performance aircraft, but of MiG manufacture. And if Paul Allen has one, because Paul Allen has a two-seater, the training version of the MiG-29, then yes, they can get in an F-16. And they also don't like the fact that the Biden administration, while berating House Speaker John Johnson in getting this to the floor, is dragging its feet in getting the weapons for the F-16s and getting those in the hands of the Ukrainian Air Force. And then somebody, you update all the time. You know my Twitter feed at Dark Secret Place.
I do know of it. Yes.
I tweeted a film that came in overnight. The Russians did their nightly launch a bunch of missiles at Odessa or Kyiv or Kharkiv or one of those cities. And the Ukrainian counterintelligence chief of the GUR, this guy Kirill Budanov, is a evil genius. I mean, he's a good genius. His plan paid off. He has deep penetration teams that are surrounding Russian Air Force bases, and they shot down the planes that are terrorizing the Ukrainians every night. They shot one down, and it came down like a maple leaf seed, you know, the little one-wing helicopter that comes down?
Pew!
It in a flat spin, a Tupolev, a Tu-22 M3 blinder. It's a supersonic bomber that the Russians have had for 30 years. It has swing wings, and with the wings out, it gets in a flat spin, and it crashes. Ha-ha. Sucks to be you guys. But anyway, it's spectacular video, and it's from overnight. But it would be a lot more fun if an F-16 was doing that. And so anyway, that's what's going on right now, and the time is up, and I don't think it will...
Well, look, we just had a chance to catch up with him as he was walking to the House floor for this vote series. He said he's not concerned about his job, that to him this is a moment of doing the right thing. But look, certainly there is a lot of frustration within his conference and among a vocal few who say that they have either diminished respect and confidence in their speaker, or in the case of people like Marjorie Taylor Greene...
This is the dumbest law. Look, by the way, because you have the majority in the Congress, the Speaker is a Republican, and then you have this stupid Kevin McCarthy rule where you can hold it over whoever the guy is, like the sword of Damocles.
Outright threatening a motion to vacate. Now, again, there are threats and then there are privilege threats, and privilege threats start the clock on this. We are not there yet. But if you listen to the way that the speaker is talking last night, he's aware of the realities of his conference right now, basically saying, hey, we've only got control of one chamber here, and we barely have control of that one. Stunning words.
And you're handing this stupid win about this supposedly the strongest immigration bill ever. Well, it was a bad bill, but you need to get out in front and say that, because they keep saying after they rejected the strongest immigration bill you're gonna get. That's a little more fair. Then keep it. The White House is terrified of immigration as an issue, so there's no point in voting it away and giving them a win, because it's a bad bill. But anyway, John Johnson comes out front and...
My name is John Johnson, but everyone here calls me Vicky. Will you please follow me?
And he keeps saying, please follow me, but...
Will you please follow me?
So there you go. All right, let's see if MSNBC turns him into a cat or what they do to him.
Speaker.
We only control one chamber.
Oh, they're giving them cat face.
And I barely have control of that. I can't. The Senate won't advance our legislation, and the president won't sign it. He won't fulfill his obligation. So why is the border not in this package? Because, Greta, we didn't have the votes to do it. So if I don't have Republican votes, that means we have to have Democrat votes.
Because there were Republicans who wanted, death to the migrants and all that in there, and that they had to get it passed. And it wasn't going to be passed. The Senate was not going to vote for it with anything to do with the border, and which is dumb because the issue would go away and you're just leaving it. I didn't know this, but the White House freaked out about Trump visiting a corner store in New York. They're so out of touch that they had Biden when he was in Philadelphia like 2 days ago. They had him go visit like a Philly shop, a sandwich shop. And people were so over him. They were not gushing over him. Like Trump walking around out of the courthouse into a bodega.
We're doing better now than we've ever done. So I think it's having a reverse effect. You know what? All I want is fairness. And these people have to be treated better. The Bodega Association, bodegas, because every week they're being robbed 2-3 times. It's crazy. It's crazy. And you know what? The police can do it. They can stop it. But they have to.
And the White House freaked out about this because he can just stop in the street and talk to New Yorkers because they know he's a New Yorker and he can say bodega. I don't know what makes it a, besides Spanish ownership, I don't know what makes it a bodega. It's here around here, you'd call it a plaid pantry or something. But it's part of the general freak out that's going on about Trump's minority outreach. And so that leads ESPN Stephen A. Smith to point something out salient. And I got to find this. Karine Jean-Pierre, they address the president's uncle was eaten by cannibals thing. That made it to the press conference yesterday. I gotta find that. But here's Stephen A. Smith, who is a high-profile sports talk guy.
On your bill, when you're a whole thing, dare I say something?
He said the obvious out loud, and this is freaking the White House out.
And then you get paid for the ex. Okay. Dare I say something that will probably be termed the most uncomfortable thing that I've ever had to articulate out of my mouth from a political perspective, but I got to tell you something.
Where else does he articulate things from? Does he have a magic mouth somewhere?
As much as people may have been abhorred by Donald Trump's statement weeks ago talking about how black folks, he's hearing that black folks find him relatable because what he's going through is similar to what black Americans have gone through. He wasn't lying. He was telling the truth. When you see the law enforcement, the court system, and everything else being exercised against him, it is something that black folks throughout this nation can relate to.
When you're an incumbent, you want to resonate, and my uncle was eaten by cannibals for some reason. That's not resonating with the voters, and especially the black voters. No one can relate to any talk of having a relative consumed by a cannibal.
How'd you feel about that hour two, Brian?
I'd hold off on sending that to the Hall of Fame.
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck.
That's not true.
With some of our historic, iconic figures.
I think it's historic and iconic. All right, back in a second, AM 770 KTDH.